like to welcome you all here today, and I'm just going to start right in. I'm going to be talking about a particular subject, but that doesn't mean you have to stay on that subject. It just means that it's a little bit of an introductory. I'm sure all of you are coming here today with your own reasons for being here, along with the support. You may have questions, or you may just need to vent what's going on. So please feel free to do that. For those who don't know me, my name is Mary Angela DeGrazia Dettucci. So if you need to call out my name for any reason, just say Mary Angela. On behalf of the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, or fondly known as AGMD, I'd like to welcome you to our patient telephone internet community support group. I'm a longtime patient who suffers from multiple digestive motility disorders and a host of other non-digestive disorders. And in 1991, I was extremely privileged to start this organization, which really over the years has grown beyond anything that was expected. And we are an awareness group, provide advocacy, promote research in the specialized area of gastroenterology, and provide much needed support to patients and their families. During this program, I encourage you to share all of your input. We want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to talk, so when you're talking, just be mindful of others and try not to monopolize the conversation. Especially, we only have 1 hour of talk, but we do meet every month. And we also ask you to be mindful of people's privacy, so please do not ask for anybody's contact information during the program, or give your contact information. If anybody is interested in communicating with others, you can always email me or call me, and through the organization, we'll respond to that person to see if they are also interested. And when you do talk, make sure that you state your first name, or if you've always wanted to be called something, make up a great name, and just state your name before you talk, and that way there, it's easier for us to identify the voice with a name. And again, if you need help jumping into the conversation, just call out Mary Angela, and I'll be sure to facilitate you into the conversation. Today, I just wanted to talk about trying to manage any anger and bitterness that can infiltrate your life, especially being impacted by digestive motility diseases and disorders. It's so easy to become angry because your life has been totally changed. Perhaps not getting any answers that you need. Perhaps you haven't been able to find a doctor with expertise. Perhaps you're bitter that others are able to eat normally and that you can't. Or perhaps you're angry because others do not understand. Perhaps you are resentful because others are able to live their lives in good health. And of course, the list goes on and on. I can recall the beginning of my journey. As each doctor passed off my worsening symptoms as stemming from my head or stress, my frustration turned into anger, and it became very hard for me to even trust a physician because I always felt like I needed to be on the defensive in order for them to believe me and get the help I needed. I can recall people with good intentions intruding into my life, as well as my family, with their assumptions, beliefs, and remedies and treatments, in regard of knowing what I was actually going through. One really memorable thing was a person who actually spoke with my parents in private, telling them that they were in denial and that I was really suffering from an eating disorder. And they went so far as to send brochures on eating disorders and a brochure on a treatment center at the Mayo Clinic. I can recall the lack of understanding, the thoughtless comments from people I knew, as well as the medical and nutritional communities. That resentment, bitterness, frustration, and anger were all very intense until something changed. And with each step I took, I learned to release that bitterness and anger, realizing that all that has happened is a means of preparing me for my life with chronic illness. It was a very long process. It took so much time, but a along with time, it took self-reflection, it took my faith, and it took a change in my attitude. So here I am, all of these years later, I no longer feel resentment or bitterness. I'm too busy trying to survive and lead a quality, purposeful life. However, I'm still working on the frustration and anger towards myself. As my illness greatly progresses, those emotions come with that frustration related to my self-expectations and disappointments. These I impose on myself and are a moment-to-moment struggle. Releasing what I am unable to do still comes hard for me, but it is one that I continue to work on becoming at peace with. My husband Frank, however, still holds some of those powerful emotions, and it pains him when he sees me suffering, and it pains him to listen to comments and hear people who don't understand or intrude unasked for questions in an illness of which they have no conception about. It pains him to have to go to social functions without me by his side. It pains him to watch people not have to struggle financially or medically because they don't have a digestive motility disorder. It pains him to even watch others lead a normal life, and the losses he feels are great, which totally exemplifies that domino effect of living with a digestive motility disorder. So I ask all of you here today, if you are dealing or have dealt with anger, bitterness, and frustration journey with digestive motility disorders, and if so, how do you manage hope? You can share your thoughts on this topic, or you can pick any other topic that you'd like to talk about, or talk about what brings you here today. If anyone who would like to start, just be my reminder, just state your first name every time you talk so that we'll know who's talking. Anybody like to start?
Sure, this is Laura.
Hi, Laura. Hi.
Hello. On the subject of bitterness and not getting taken care of, I'm sure everybody can relate to what you were saying before about doctors. You know, I call it the deer in the headlight look. You tell them what's wrong with you and they have no clue. And something in the beginning, I mean, I couldn't get help either. I'm a diabetic, type 1 diabetic, and I got gastroparesis in 2001. And it took 2 years and I think 42 hospital visits before I was referred out to Canvas to go to a doctor that helped create the pacemaker type thing, the neurostimulator. And he was the only doctor that was able to help me at the time. But my way to get rid of my bitterness towards doctors, because I was really angry, why can't you fix me? What do you mean you can't figure it out? It was very upsetting, and my doctor was having my gallbladder out, tests, you know, nothing was coming to. I decided and realized that we are the customer, doctors are the store. If you go to a store and they don't charge you what you want or give you what you want, you don't go back, right? So I've learned to control bitterness when there's people in the medical field that don't, you know, believe you or give you a hard time, go to another doctor. Just find somebody else. And, you know, it's very hard for some people, depending on your insurance or area where you live. But if you can do that, that's really a good way to get it off your chest. I had, through and through all the bitterness of when I was sick, first 2 years, I was sick, it was in my head. I talked to my parents, they pretty much disowned me for about 5 or 6 years because they didn't really believe. Pretty much, they just didn't talk to me, you know, couldn't call me or anything. It's okay, everything's fine now because I learned, you know, I got my gastroparesis, quote, under control for the most part. I still have episodes, but it's nothing like it was getting hospitalized every month. And I was able, once I got all the hoopla with all the stuff trying to get this condition under control, and finally being able to a little bit and having a little bit of quality of life, I was able to back myself up and start forgiving people. and trying to understand why they did that. You know, and I mean, I didn't talk about it with my parents, but I understood some of the reasons that they could have not appreciated it and some of the things they said. But it really takes a lot off you if you can also get rid of some of your bitterness, if you can go back and forgive people that did stuff in the past. It has nothing to do with your disease. It's very helpful. I mean, I forgave my ex-husband. Never should have, but I did. I mean, I don't like him, and I don't talk to him, really, but I forgave him for what he did because it was less stress on me. It was another thing I didn't have to think about, you know, and not hold a grudge, because if you hold stuff in, your GP will flare. More stress, the more you hold it in, the more flares you get and the more awful episodes. So that's kind of how I deal with my stuff. And if not, I call Mary Angela. And she hooks me up.
Great suggestions. Even the one about calling. No, but very, very good suggestions. And I know that I have found that when you hold on to emotions, which is all part of the process of accepting what your life is and coping with all that you're going through, and you may find that there are waves when, you know, I got it, I got everything under control, and then a certain event will spark all of them to come again. For example, if you're in an emergency room and then you find, oh my God, deja vu, nobody's understanding, nobody knows, nobody's listening, you know, they can come back very easily, but it takes so much effort to carry that kind of emotion when you're struggling with so many other stresses in your life. And a reminder that for those, this question I get so often, does stress cause a motility problem? And my answer to that, and there have been studies on this, and I may contradict some of the studies depending on where those studies are coming from, but stress does not cause it. However, stress certainly exacerbates symptoms. And the tender spot in so many people is the gut, that brain gut thing. And when you are stressed, you feel it right in that gut. And that, in turn, can cause a lot of other symptoms to become exacerbated. So, but what you're feeling and all that you're experiencing is not in your head. It's a reaction to what is going on. You know, it's stressful living with a chronic illness. It's a day-to-day thing, especially with motility. And there's still not a heck of a lot of understanding about it, even though they're still finding and making great strides in cancer research. When you say in heart disease and even diabetes, when you say you have those, there's an idea that formulates in people's minds. When you say, I have a digestive motility disease, I have gastroparesis, I have pseudobstruction, I have achalasia, the response is can be totally different. So it's a different walk of life than with the others. So I don't know if any others want to talk about that anger and coping and the stress-related part, or if you are here for another reason and you just want to ask a question or share something that's on your mind.
Mary Angela, can I?
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
You want to
go? Go ahead. Go ahead. I'll go after you. Go
like ahead. Traffic, and then you let somebody else by, and then everybody goes the same time. So, name person, and we'll just get to everybody. Name?
Okay. My name is Sandy, and I am new to this condition. I have spoken to you, Mary Angela. You gave me the phone numbers, and I appreciate this. And I'm listening very intently. I'd like to ask a question. Laura stated that these conditions will flare. So am I hoping, I'm assuming right, that at times you will get better with this?
What is your condition, Sandy?
Mine is gastroparesis, the stomach motility. And like you say, you know, when you have heart problems, which I was born with a bad heart, couple of years ago, I had major repair, which now I'm being told the damage to my vagus nerve, part of the surgery that I had, may have injured this vagus nerve, which helps cause this problem. And I'm in the process of learning what I can eat and tolerate and what I can't. But it would give me great hope here to think that this might level off at some point, and at times you might be better with this. Is that right?
Yep, there are occasions, you know, and depending on, again, what treatment you get, how aggressive you are in your treatment, what, you know, what works for you, because every one of us is different. Like, nobody could really give you a complete menu of what you can and can't eat, because I could eat it and be fine. You could eat it and be sick for 2 days. Basically, though, with those rules, stay away from skin, fruits and vegetable skins, fresh fruits and vegetables. You kind of want them already in a can and mushed or digested as far as they can go. Lettuce is a really bad salad, which most of us miss dearly.
Yeah, you're right. I walked to the grocery store and I drool.
Oh, yeah. It's, the grocery store is no fun anymore. But it is, there is ways to treat it. You have to, and it's, in my experience, I mean, it's taken me 13 years to finally, the last 2 years, I have been okay. I've been through the other, you know, nine, I've through hell. I mean, I went through everything that everybody goes through, and then I kept trying to find different treatments and talk to different people, and I mean, I really did a lot of that work, and I was able to de-stress my life a lot, and for me, that helped calm it down, because mine was, I mean, I had gastroparesis, and I didn't know it, being a type 1 diabetic. They say that like 75% of us have it and don't know it. I had it, but I had no clue. And then I had a big thing going on at work, and it was a big stress deal, and bam. I was in the hospital every week for, I don't know, like every month for like a week and a half for 3 years. I mean, I knew all the nurses, everybody in the ER, everybody. And now I, knock on wood, have not been to the hospital since I got my new pacer in December 17th of 2012. I've been sick a couple times, but I've been able to handle it at home with meds instead of having to go to the hospital, which was huge for me. Because as any of you know, I'm sure, the stress of going to the hospital, what are they going to say? Are they going to argue with me? Are they going to tell me it's in my head? Are they going to just treat me and let me get better? It's very stressful to go to the hospital with this disease, I think. And I think that, you know, if you can get to manage it at home, that's one big piece of stress you can get rid of is going to the hospital. I mean, it takes a while to get it all, you know, worked out and what works at home and what doesn't, but it's doable. There is hope for all of us. And they are working on a pill.
And thank you, Laura. Laura, by the way, is she's been an AGMD volunteer for years now. Also now being an AGMD volunteer mentor in training. So she will be running one of these groups for gastroparesis in the future, but we're still in the training. So I appreciate Laura and your input here. I just want to speak a little bit before we get to the other people about that unpredictable part. And so many people say, am I going to get better? Is it going to get worse? All I can tell you is that with these digestive motility diseases and disorders, the unpredictable nature of them is huge. So as Laura had indicated, one day you may be able to eat a particular food. Problem. Another couple of days or a week or a month later, you may eat that food and say, oh my God, what the heck happened? And then the next time you eat it, it could be fine. So that's one thing. But there are little guidelines, and that's why the repertoire of foods, a lot of people try to stay within the realm of what better experiences with what they've had. Another thing is that, yes, some people, they find that it ebbs and it flows. It will get exacerbated, and then you can even get fooled into saying, oh, my God, I'm 100% cured. And I've had people within the organization who have joined in desperate need, and then suddenly they disappear. And when I get back in touch with them, they say, oh, we don't need you anymore. We're fine. And then the years pass by, and sometimes they're still fine. Other times, a couple of years down the road, they're going, oh, my God, I thought I was fine. And then sometimes it just is meaning making some adjustments in scheduling, in diet, in stress factors, all of those things. So in answer to your question, it varies from individual, and it varies from gut to gut. And but if you are experiencing that, it's certainly, you never give up the hope that you are going to get better. And the other thing is that there's so much research going on now with digestive motility, as well as specifically with gastroparesis, that the future looks very bright in providing treatments for these particular things. So on that statement, does anybody else have that input or question? Somebody else?
Mary Angela, I have a question.
What's your name?
Denise. I'm sorry. Hi. I just want to make mention that two things, more on a behavioral health kind of thing. And also genetically, I have a daughter who is 25. She'll be 25 next month, and she's suffering like I'm suffering, or struggling. I don't like the word suffer. but anyway, I work in a behavioral health organization, and I also am a client of the organization. And to my amazement, I kind of just mentioned, you know, what I was going through, and automatically, you know, the lights lit up, and these other women that I was talking with also said, hey, I have this too. And so many of them do. And they keep it quiet. They keep it, you know, that they're kind of ashamed of it. And, you know, I just went and said, no. I said, I've lived with it since my, I guess, late teens. Into my 20s, and I said, don't be ashamed. I said, it's something that you can't help. It's something out of your control. And they have said periodically that because of their lack of control in the motility arena, that it has caused them to either at times over medicate, not medicate, go into the mental hospitals. And I even said, you know, me too. I said, you know, been there, done that. And, you know, thank God I have been through two marriages. And relationships, it has affected my relationships. And what would be funny is if I met a gentleman that also had the problem, and, you know, that's a joke. But I guess what I'm trying to say, in all due respect, is that I'm asking if other people have also felt the mental health aspect in coping with their motility problems.
Anybody like to respond? Yeah, I think when you're dealing especially with digestive motility, whether it is vomiting part, whether it's feeling nauseous, whether you have fecal incontinence, whether you have urinary incontinence, whether you have the abdominal pain, or my situation, you may hear my voice fluctuate today because I lose it. I may lose it right in the middle of the program because of esophageal issues. That unpredictable nature is one part. And the other aspect is that some of the symptoms can be very embarrassing in public. And I've done presentations where I said, look, secret out. The secret is living with digestive motility. And Denise gave a perfect example of how many people live in the closet of life because they're embarrassed, they're afraid, it's such a private issue. And that's our job as patients, to educate, provide support for other people who may have been too embarrassed or may all of a sudden feel, wow, you mean there's somebody else who gets it. That's our job now, to help others and teach others, because it can be a very lonely and isolating road doing it yourself. But when you talk, and I found this in so many of our programs, when somebody all of a sudden hears, they get it because they live it. It's a huge thing in their life. And I know so many patients have had to, misdiagnose, being able to adjust, and they've ended up in mental facilities. Mm-hmm. Also, the benefit of seeing a psychologist or seeing a psychiatrist and getting therapy, because the road of life of having these motility disorders is extremely challenging, as are a lot of illnesses. But when your gut isn't working, it affects your ability to think clearly, it affects your self-confidence, it affects you socially, it affects you financially even, relationships. It's like a cancer that just spreads to every breath in your life. So, all good points, all good points. Anybody else?
This is Laura again.
Hi, Laura.
I just wanted to make one comment on Denise's comments. When I was first going through this and going to the hospital, I think my doctor, the first probably 7 hospital visits, which were all at least like a week long, he would not let me out any time for the first 7 without a psych consult.
Mm-hmm.
And the same guy kept coming, and I'm like, even though I'm a diabetic, I love to eat. That's not the problem. I can't make it stop. And he finally told my daughter, he's like, don't do this anymore. The girl is not bulimic or anything. She has a problem. And that was huge for me.
Right.
Okay. And it was really sad because I'd sit in the hospital for 2 extra days till this guy could get there.
But I also interject for a minute and say that some people who have digestive motility, it can turn into a type of eating disorder because that fear and aversion of foods comes into play. And then they end up really kind of starving themselves or binging, where they know that the symptoms are going to be, really prevalent, and then they eat it anyway, which happens to even people on diet, but it becomes a chronic thing. So I have talked to people on both of those aspects of life. So a lot of people, it makes it easy for people to say, oh, I have an eating disorder, because they're very selective of what they eat, and oftentimes it doesn't make sense to the outside world, but to their world, to the patient's world, it's their way of trying to get some control over things. Now, I know Sandy was talking about diet issues, and Laura was too. I think that is such a huge frustration, too, is knowing what to eat, when to eat, the amount to eat, and trying to get the nutritional support that you need in order for your body to function. And I know I've talked to so many dietitians about this as well, and we have one dietitian in particular who has gastroparesis, but she also has a lot of other issues. And we've spoken directly about how nutritionists, dietitians really need to be more educated on this, because you can't give a cookie cutter type of diet for motility diseases. And it does vary from one person to the other. If you have gastroparesis, but you also have malabsorption, no, that's a whole different ball of wax. If you have diabetes and you have gastroparesis, you're going to treat that a little differently. Depending what other medical issues they have, depending what type of medication they're on, all of that comes into play. So there is research being done, but I think that's a huge frustration in this particular patient as well as certified dietitian. Here I taught so many people my whole career on how to eat properly. And now I have gastroparesis and constipation, irritable bowel, everything else. And it goes against everything that I trained for and told people. Because when you have gastroparesis, fiber is not necessarily your best friend and can cause problems. So, and irritable bowel, that's very contradictory. A lot of people say, yes, do have fiber. But a lot of doctors are saying, no, don't have fiber. And that leaves it to the patient to try to discern, oh, my God, what do I do? And every time you're trying something, it can instill a little, you know, it takes courage to try different things. So I understand that those are questions that we get constantly. What should I eat? And the rule of thumb I know for gastroparesis is that you, what I call grazing throughout the day, do like the cows, mini meals, avoiding dry food, avoiding fat, avoiding iron content, avoiding food that are very gassy, roughage, cabbage. I wouldn't go out and have a hot dog. And also the quantity. So instead of sitting down and having those big meals, just try blood sugar level too can be a challenge. So you want to make sure that you're eating throughout the day, all amounts, and that can help in some way. And then, of course, there are some medications, and I know some people, and I'm sorry for focusing on gastroparesis right now, because I'm sure there are patients with other things, but there are different medications, as well as for all the other motility, some of the other motility things that are out there that can at least help control it in certain circumstances. Yeah.
Mary Angela.
Yes, Enam.
May I make a comment about that anger question that you said? When I was first diagnosed and we did not know what was wrong with me, I was in the hospital for a week trying to find out what was wrong with me, and they had brought in a gastroenterologist, and he was just so rude, and I was like so angry because he did all the normal tests, and he kept saying to me, this was my primary care. He put me in the hospital because I couldn't keep anything out. We didn't know what was wrong. And he was so rude. He kept saying stuff to me like, we're doing, everything's coming back normal. We're doing the scope, but you're just real. We're going to do the scope tomorrow, but you're just real anxious. And then that Thursday, I was able to go to the bathroom, and then I came home Mother's Day, and he kept saying, well, you just worry about going to the bathroom, and you're just anxious, and it's all in your head. And that was the beginning. I felt so angry because I was, you know, I'm blind and have the cerebral palsy, and I was watching a show, and he was like, well, you know, you need to get out of bed, and you need to do this, and you need to do that, and why don't you have fiber, and why don't you, I don't know what's wrong with me, we're trying to, and it's all in your head, and you know, you're just real anxious. And what was frightening for Mom in the beginning was not knowing what was wrong with me. And then later when we found out and the doctors, we went back to the main office where we did more tests later on, it was it was hard for Mom to get used to the fact the doctor, when we went back to Dr. Wu's group, because Dr. Mark's group sent me down there, and the Dr. Wu's group told Mom later on, he goes, she has to have enemas every night. And it was, you know, real, she felt, I could tell she felt angry knowing that, you know, all of a sudden things were going to change. And it was, you know, frightening for her to try to deal with what was going on and not knowing, and it was challenging.
Yeah, and I understand too, as you're traveling through this journey and reflecting on the doctors, it's very, very difficult. Doctors are cured to treat the patient, make them better, heal them if possible, but they try to control symptoms. When you have a complex patient, so many issues, that's a concern. And then also when you run out of options and really don't have a lot more to give the patient, it makes it extraordinarily hard for the physician as well. So,
A very complex patient.
I think most people here are just complex. I'm wondering how many people on this call, along with having digestive motility problem, also have other illnesses. Are there a lot?
I think all of us.
I do. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah, and whether some of them came about as a result of the motility, or whether the illnesses came first and the motility is secondary to that, which can happen. Still, you're automatically going to be less, because when you take anything orally, be it a pill, it's going to affect your gut. So, you know, it's your body is not going to work. Your GI tract doesn't work normally. And so oftentimes what happens when you take different pills, they're metabolized differently. They may hang out in your gut a little longer than should be, or they may just poop right out if you have, you know, the diarrhea. So it's very, very difficult. And so you have to look at it from the doctor's perspective, although I'm sure, you know, there are a lot of physicians out there who do have that ego attitude. But at the same time,
can I interject something I think might help? I spent my whole adult life in medicine to end up with the problem that we're all dealing with. This is Sandy again.
Yes.
But something I learned, and it's really come back to me, is that over half of the physicians that have their name on doors, okay, barely made it through college, much less through medical school, but they made it. People fail to stop and think that, hey, there are doctors out there who barely made it, but they made it. And then there are some who were really great, and they do good. And once you become a patient like we all are, that has come home to me in spades, because I dealt with these people most of my adult life, but it was on a different level. And I, too, the last speaker, when she was talking about how she was treated and talked to, I, too, had a gastroenterologist who was that way. And I just decided, hey, I can't do this anymore. So I went quite a distance and found one that sat down, and he just talked to me, listened to me, and he said, I think this is what you have, but I will have to do tests. When I had the test and he came back and he said, what people don't realize is that when you can't get the nutrients to your brain that you need, and you can't eat right with this is I call it an animal of a different order than anything I've ever, it's not like diabetes and the heart disease and the rheumatoid arthritis, some of these things that we deal with. So few people know anything about this illness, but if you can't get the food and the nutrients you need to your brain, you are going to be crazy. There's no other way of putting it. Mary Angela, first time I talked to her, said, some mornings I can't even press the button on the microwave to fix myself breakfast. Well, that was really where I was when I first spoke to her. But then when the doctor sat down and I think I'm lucky with this gastroenterologist. I seem to have one who understands this illness, which for me is a big thing because my internal medicine doesn't understand any of it. But I think we all have these, most of us probably feel anger at some of these people, but you have to remember some of them ADs all the way through. And hopefully, if we're lucky, we'll get someone who maybe made most Bs, if this makes any sense to anyone, and I'll shut my mouth after this.
You also have to remember, too, that medicine is called a medical practice. And,
yes.
And so keeping that practice is an exact science. I just don't want them practicing on me, however. What you need to do in order to get the help. But having a physician with expertise is huge. Having a physician who is compassionate and may not have that knowledge but is willing to work with you, which is what I have in my life. I have a team of doctors who are really willing to work with me just to monitor me. In my particular case, there is absolutely nothing they can do. It's been for so many years. However, I'm so grateful that these doctors are willing to monitor me and work with me. So having that is huge as well. But there are some really great doctors who are caring and have that expertise. I do know, however, and I have more and more from patients, that the primary care specialist, their knowledge of all of this, seems to be, in general, very limited.
Very limited, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Primary care to help coordinate it. In fact, a lot of patients do the coordination themselves and then ask the primary care. That's what I do. But when you mention a particular thing, they know less than a lot of the GIs. So that's an area where there really has to be more education, and it's not only in the schools but as patients. That's what we have.
Yeah.
We have jobs. Anybody who thinks they don't have anything to do, well, you do. There's your new career in helping others, not by selection, but by the way that the circumstances of your illness. Anybody else have a different topic or want to capitalize on something we've talked about? I'm wondering if there's anybody here today that is just at the beginning of their journey. Perhaps they don't have a diagnosis, or they're still just at the very beginnings, within 1 year or 2 years of trying to cope with what they're going through. Anybody on?
I am. Sandy, I've only been diagnosed a month. I've been dealing with it for 4 months, and I lost 26 pounds. I have no fanny and no, I'm very new at it, so anything anyone can tell me about, I'm all ears.
Sandy, I just have a question. Were you the
first name?
Lady that, I'm sorry. Hello?
Yes, just say your
okay.
First.
No, I was just going to say, were you the lady that had mentioned you had heart problems also, Sandy?
Yes, very, very bad.
Okay. All right, I just needed to hear that because I think that was you. Okay, that must
yes.
be tough along with this new thing. I mean, I can't even imagine, but that's all I wanted to say. Sorry.
Okay.
How many people on this call, you know, have a heart problem, have a problem with diabetes, have a problem with migraines, have a problem with their back? Anybody here with any of those things? Anybody with lupus, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, restless legs? Anybody with those?
The only thing I can think of, I'm sorry, Sandy, is that I have mitral valve, which everybody usually does, but mine is bad. And, you know, the doctor suggested, I guess because of my, you know, chronic constipation things, that, you know, I do not, you know, push or whatever for a lengthy long of time, because he did mention to me that, you know, I'm on the verge, and he said it's not happening now, but he said, you know, just watch out for CHF. And I said, okay, you know, I mean, I'm 59, I'm going to be 60 in September, but you know, it's my main thing is I want to get my daughter to know about this before, or you know, she gets to where I'm at, and I don't want her to go through what I went through, and you know, my heart goes out to her, but you know, that's all. I'm sorry. I'm done.
Oh, everybody, but I just want to interject and just remind you to make sure you say your first name or make up a first name so that we can identify the voice with who.
Oh, that this was Denise again. Sorry. It's Denise, yeah.
I'm Mary Angela. So when you're talking about these things, everybody's input, be it a suggestion, be it just relating your own experiences, be it responding to somebody, to what they're saying, all of that is so valuable, because you have to remember, this organization and this group is all half of all of you, and hopefully someday we won't need this anymore, but be always so humbled by everybody who is suffering, and yet their willingness to hold each other up and understand what everybody is going through. And whether you're just listening in on this call and not responding, I'm just praying that you are really finding this beneficial. So never apologize for your input on this, whatever the case. This is a forum where we can talk about gas, burping, you know, fecal incontinence, all of this, and feel comfortable, because this is our lives. This is what we do. Everybody else does it, but we just do it in a different way. So
yeah. We just do it in a different way. Yeah,
that's what I do.
And
anybody else would like to talk? Name, please.
Denise, I have a question. When you mentioned CHF, what is that?
Congestive heart failure. What can happen is what I have right now is what they call POTS syndrome. Nobody even knows what that is either. It's where your sympathetic and your parasympathetic are not coordinated within your system, and it leaves you lethargic. It leaves you a bunch of different symptoms. But I'm finding out, to be honest with you, I'm finding out that through my diet or through my regime and things like that, it's actually helping. But I have to. The only thing is, it's a discipline. And you know, you have to follow it. You know, I'd love to be one of those people who can eat, you know, 5 hamburgers at a setting or something like that. You know, I envy those people, but at the same time, I know what it would do to me. It would kill me. But you know, what's the consequences? I do choose to lead a good life, or you know what I can lead, and you know, that's my choice, and so far so good. But I do have my dark days, don't get me wrong, but I hope to see, and I continue to see, you know more light at the end of the tunnel than I do the dark days, even though sometimes they happen. And that's Did that help, Sandy?
I'm sorry.
Okay, you have the cerebral palsy, correct?
Yeah, I'm the one as the CP and the gastroparesis.
Yes.
And help.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's
no, it was helpful. So I understood. Do you also, with the CHF, do you also have the gastroparesis as well?
Oh yeah, but I don't have CHF yet, and I hope not to get it. But my doctor did say, you know, if I don't, you know, I do have to take, Coric, which is for high blood pressure, but I'm on that, and I'm also on an antidepressant, but he did tell me to, you know, watch, especially right now. I'm in Pennsylvania and it's very hot. I don't know how it is where you guys are at, but you know,
you
I try
Pittsburgh?
To stay. No, over by Philadelphia.
Oh, okay, because I lived in Pittsburgh for a while. That's why I was asking.
Okay. Yeah, no, over by Philadelphia, and it's hot today, and I'm just, you know, I choose to stay in today, and be with you ladies, and you know what, I am so grateful for this organization, and I thank everybody, you know, I'm glad I listened to you ladies, because I know more and more, you know, how many more people are out there that have suffered or struggled through this, and it's just amazing. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
I just want to say add to that, and you were talking about eating and knowing what it's going to do to you, and I think so many of us with digestive disability problems tend to orchestrate when we're going to eat, when we need to go out, and how much and what we're going to eat, really when we go out in a social setting. I know some people don't eat, or they'll just eat a little thing because they know that they're going in a social function and they don't trust what's going to happen. So that's really, so that, again, it's that unpredictable nature, which is so challenging. I have found, however, in my experience, my own personal as well as listening to others, that those people who, and it, I understand, it depends how you're wired, but those people have support, family support, friend support, those people who learn about it and educate themselves, those people who have strong faith, and those people who have that determination and that willing spirit fare much better than those who are walking this walk alone. I know, in so many circumstances, relationships crumble. We're going to be talking about that in our Let's Talk series. The focus is going to be on testing relationships. That's taking place on the 30th.
June 30th.
Yes, thank you, Inam. She's a schedule keeper. But it really does intrude on every aspect of your life. And it's a matter of, once you are dealing with this for a while, trying to, and I spoke about this in one of our other patient groups, learn to not have the illness take over your life, but perhaps integrate it into your life. So I know in my case, at first, when this came into my life, it consumed everything that I did, and I had to acquiesce to it. I mean, when I woke up in the morning, I would go into the bathroom, I would wake up super, super early in the wee hours and begin my day in the bathroom, giving myself an enema, giving myself another enema, giving myself another one, and giving myself another one, and sitting on that toilet for hours and hours, not even having any of the water come out. That governed my whole day. There, it was just, all right, this is what I have to do. This is what I have to try. This is that. and now who do I go to see? All of these things, and it was just consuming, but I was still trying to find a diagnosis. As the years passed, believe me, this did not just flip the switch, you know, all better. But years I learned to give and take, integrate it into my life, which I still do right now, because on the days when I'm able to perhaps have a little more energy, oh, I go all out. But on the days that they pay for it, but at least I got things done. On the days that I can't, it's learning to say, all right, you won this battle, but I'm going to go back to this battle another day. So it's a compromise, learning how, even training the family in a sense, to know these are what I need. These are things I can participate. And I have such a wonderful family. You talk about blessed in the midst of storm, that they actually schedule everything that I participate in around my time. So I gave this example. I have two nieces, I have many nieces, but one got married last year, and I have one that's getting married next month. And they actually made their service early in the late afternoon, because they know that by the mid to late afternoon, I'm not going to be able to participate and be there. And so they scheduled these events, these important events in their life, and the holidays around when I can at least be there for a little while. I may not stay the whole time, but at least I can be a part of it. And I don't know how many families do that for people, but
that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Count your blessings like that, which can be hard to do when you're suffering greatly, but to know that you have people, and my husband the same thing, who are there for you and really work through that challenge and adapt so that it makes it easier for everybody, and I'm not missing out on life and they're not missing out on having me in their lives. It makes a huge difference. And I know a lot of people don't have faith, but I have that faith foundation, which has only gone stronger through every crisis. And that's been huge to me. Plus, I'm a stubborn Italian, so it takes a lot to let me give in. So
Mary Angela?
Yes.
This is Lisa. I do have a quick question as far as, you know, I'm still in the acceptance process of, you know, my whole issue. I have fecal incontinence. I have damage to my sphincter muscles. So I guess I feel like, how do you, I feel like I'm not living at this point. I'm just existing. How do you get past that?
Lisa, this is Anam.
Hi.
And one of the things that I was the one that has the chronic inertia and the constipation and the bladder incontinence and the fecal, and so, like I did last Saturday, what I try to do is in order to try to live a quality life, I try to think of, you know, things that are positive, of course, with me down this road since 2002, but the bladder incontinence didn't start till 2007, and so what I try to do is we have plenty of for the fecal incontinence. Do you use Kroger diapers? You know, for the fecal, do you use the? I have to wear diapers.
I wear pads every day. Every day for.
Of the things is I don't know what store you have near you, but I would like to make a suggestion. We have a Kroger nearby me, and we get the diapers, and they're like for $10 we get like 12 diapers, and mom is always, she spends $100 a month on diapers and pads and for that reason. And so does that help with the fecal incontinence, using the diapers and pads? And also I try to just hear music and you know, hear positive things to try to exist, because I'm homebound, and it's physically hard for me to just, you know, get out because I have other issues. I'm the one that has blindness and palsy, and so
it definitely helps. But I guess maybe I'm still in the acceptance.
And it is. And Lisa, I just want to jump in for a minute.
Sure.
We do go through stages of acceptance. You go through the whole stage of mourning, like a death. And what you are mourning is the loss of perhaps your health, like the mourning of being able to eat, the mourning of the loss of being able to be so, the mourning of, and we talked about this, Lisa, you and I, your relationship, intimacy, all of these things. And, you know, the ability to just live a normal life, a career, whatever it have been, for all aspects of it. And then once you do come to terms, if you don't come to terms with it, it will always become a hurdle, and then you don't have the ability to integrate it into your life and live a quality life. However, even those of us that come to the point where we accept it, it doesn't mean every day we still are like two-year-olds, and we take that tantrum and have to go through that whole process again when the symptoms become exacerbated or somebody makes a comment or you're in that circumstance where it triggers it. It's like a piece of music that will trigger some sort of a memory or emotion.
Right.
So I know that some things that do help, and you need to give yourself time to accept it. It doesn't happen overnight. And, again, it depends on so many circumstances and how you are as a person. But I know some that help. You know, I had mentioned music. Some people meditate. Some people find keeping a journal very helpful. People find, of course, support groups this in order to help them accept. Professional help is always a good thing. And also, spoke about this, Lisa, when you get involved in sharing your story, volunteering, turning that bad things that happened in your life into a positive experience, helping others and sharing your information and drawing awareness, that can be a huge help. And
I guess maybe that's part of the reason, like, I do feel alone because I don't really know anybody that suffers from my problem.
Yeah, and when you do, I know that the other research has that fecal incontinence, and so we had our very first fecal incontinence or urinary incontinence. It covers both. We had our first meeting the beginning of this month, and unfortunately, some of the people were too ill and didn't attend, but we had, and some were from foreign countries and didn't participate. But we also had some people who didn't say anything on the call, which is fine because still got out of it, and they were responding to me just saying that, you know, my eyes are tearful right now because what Lisa had been talking about was so meaningful, but they weren't ready to talk about it. And,
right. Where I'm ready to talk about it, it's just that it's so hard to between.
Some people, and I know for myself, was at the very beginning, it was very, very hard. And I remember the first time I had to talk about it, and actually the first time I ever did was at a conference that we held. And it was with doctors and patients and everybody else. Oh, my God, just talking about this is very challenging because you're sharing a piece of your private life. And even I remember the first time I heard a symposium where there was somebody that was talking about it was a doctor, and I left that feeling, oh my God, there are people who understand, but at the same time,
no idea where you like, to go.
All part of the acceptance. But once you start hearing that there are so many other people that have what you have or something very like it, it changes everything because you really, it confirms you're not alone and that other people, you all should look like bobbleheads. Yep, know that, and I'm that, going through it. And so you can really share those experiences and questions and concerns and know that even if we don't have the answers, we can understand some aspects of it because we're traveling that road or have traveled it. And once you start hearing more people, and then you become even more involved in this organization, as I've told Lisa, Laura knows this, it is the platform for all of you. You can get in as much as you want on this, and we have a lot of opportunities and are open to ideas. It may take a little while, but once that begins, you will see this emerge, just like when I started this organization. It had a nucleus so small, and I never thought this would branch off. And look at it today.
Right.
And it was very isolating out there. Hey, anybody out there? Anybody care? Anybody know anything about it?
Oh, trust me, I was just so thankful to even find the support online.
Yeah, so, and so privileged. Inam, quickly say your because we have to wind up before we get disconnected.
Real quick, when you started this organization, would you have like, say, about 100 people that were involved or 200?
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh. How did this in 1991? So I'm giving away a little bit of my age. But to me, every birthday is a celebration, as is every day that I'm alive. But I had a very small nucleus of we had two physicians who were involved with this organization to begin with, two or three. And actually, they remained with this organization, and it's through them referring patients that it all started. There was nobody. There was nobody who, and then little by little, I would get phone calls. Little by little, I'd get things in the mail saying, oh, you know, I hear that you started this. I have the same thing. Can you help? And then it just blossomed from there. And, of course, the internet made it even huge, even bigger. And then with our symposiums that we've had, programs like this, it catches fire in a good way. So, my life, as challenging as it has been and as it is, it's really been a fulfilling life. And I'm just not a life that I would have signed up for. But seeing though I have it, the rewards have been wonderful. And on that note, I want to thank all of you again for joining us today, and for those of you who shared a bit of what you're going through in our group, and for those who listened, I hope you got a lot out of it. I always end these programs, same thing, that you are all tremendous heroes. Remember that. You are living lives. You are the quiet heroes. Maybe some are a little bit more outspoken than others, but you live your life with all of these challenges, and a lot are not recognized. That makes you great heroes. And in my eyes, I hold you all with such humble graciousness in the honor of having you with us today and with all you're going through. I just want to thank you so much, and it is indeed a privilege. I hope you will join us in some of our other programs this month, and will also join us next month for all of our programs. Visit our website for more information on the upcoming ones. We're going to be updating our July calendar very soon. Excuse me. And you can email me, and if you want to be on the mailing list, the regular mailing list, to get things in the old-fashioned way of mailing.
I have Peggy, hold on. Yeah, and so hold on. I'm almost done.
Quickly, because we're going to get timed out, you know.
Yeah, thank you for the meeting.
Oh, it's
yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
And I bless you all, and I hope that you will join us again. Thank you so much, all my heroes. God bless.
God bless
you.
You too.
Bless you too, Mary Angela.
Thank
Thanks.
You.